cuts in on the right foot, launches a golazo!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer, and brought to you in part by Michelob Ultra, official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. Man, there is so much going on around the game. On the field, there's a lot going on. The League's Cup is underway. No, Atlanta United is not part of it. Charlotte 1-0 up on Pumas. Evander has scored another wonder goal for Cincinnati. I always enjoy the League's Cup. I like the competition between MLS teams and Liga MX teams. I also enjoy the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. It doesn't have to be one or the other. It should not be one or the other. Why not both? There's a lot of on-the-field stuff going on with international friendlies. I've been watching a lot of games from South America as of late. Yeah, MLS played last weekend, and yeah, we'll talk about it in the 3-4-3 just a little bit because I don't really want to revisit Atlanta United and Philadelphia. And thankfully, there's been enough big news that we're going to talk about some big off-the-field news tonight. I think two really big things that could potentially shape the next era of soccer in the United States. Two very different announcements over the past couple of days. One, which we'll get into in the next segment, Mauricio Pochettino is back as the manager for the U.S. men's national team. He is under contract now through the World Cup in 2030. He'll have to qualify. He'll have bigger expectations. We'll talk about all that in segment number two, but let's start with the new commissioner in Major League Soccer. This is a big deal because we have not seen a new commissioner in Major League Soccer in over 25 years. Don Garber has been in charge of the league for a long, long time. When he came in the door, there were 12 teams. It dropped down to 10, and now it's 30. We'll talk about Garber here in a second, but let's talk about the new man who was voted in, Larry Berg. He's the co-owner of LAFC, which he will have to divest of. He was voted in by the Board of Governors as the next commissioner yesterday, and he spoke to the media today. This is a big deal, and I think where he comes from is part of the conversation. He's been a managing owner at LAFC since they came into the league on the field in 2018. Before that, 30 years at Apollo Global Management. He left there in 2022, Harvard MBA. He's held ownership stakes in AS Roma, in Serie A, in Swansea City, in the Premiership and the Championship in England. LAFC has been successful. They've won an MLS Cup. They've won two Supporters' Shields. They've won an Open Cup. They've been to two CONCACAF Finals. It came down to between Larry Berg and David Nathanson, who is a former Fox executive. He is a current minority owner of the Seattle Sounders. He would have had, I think, a very different, maybe, imprint on the league. I think the media side of things, and maybe more specifically the broadcast side of things, would have been very interesting with David Nathanson running the league. He's going to stay involved in the process. He is involved in league committees now. I don't think there was any friction between Berg and Nathanson, so David Nathanson will be very important when it comes down to the next TV rights deal, or maybe broadcast rights deal is a better way to put it, in 2026. And that deal is set to come up in the summer of 2029 when the Apple deal ends. Now let's talk about Don Garber a little bit. He took over the job in August of 1999. If you're new to MLS, it launched in 1996. It was really the great legacy of the 1994 World Cup. Launching a new men's professional league was one of the caveats to getting that World Cup. It was given to the United States in 1988. there was not a professional league in the United States at that point, not on any major scale. The North American Soccer League had folded at the end of the 1984 season. It was not easy to launch a new league. There were people who were interested and people who ultimately invested, but there was a lot of skepticism, a lot of concern. It was very difficult to get the needed money in on time to start. That's why it did not start in 1995, as was originally intended. It started in 96. They had to get creative, I think, to get enough money in the door to get started. So it started kind of tenuously and then had some really great early success to the point that they expanded, and that was part of getting the money in to get underway initially, with Chicago and the Miami Fusion coming in 1998. Well, by the time you got to 1999, there were some real questions. The commissioner, Doug Logan, the first commissioner of the league, he left office, and Don Garber got the opportunity. Didn't come from a soccer background, came from the NFL side of things. And he has been extremely successful. And look, I know it's the cool thing to do to yell about commissioners and yell about people in charge, and I get it. I understand anytime something goes wrong, it's yell and blame the commissioner. I know whenever there's a big league-wide event, it's fun to boo the commissioner. I get it. I understand. But in this case, when you're talking about a league going from 10 teams to 30, you're talking about a league that now averages over 22,000 fans per game. You're talking about a league that, if they choose to expand by two more teams, which I would expect them to do sometime in the next decade, you're talking about franchise fees of probably just under $1 billion. You're talking about major stadiums being built. You're talking about a TV rights deal that, when it was signed with Apple, was over $1 billion of spend that Apple was going to spend over that long period of time, and they will. It's really impressive what Don Garber has done, and that doesn't need to get lost in the shuffle. And that doesn't get diminished by what I'm about to say. It's time for a new voice. It's time for new leadership. And I think the reason why it's time for that is not really anything that Garber has done. Garber doesn't write the checks for the owners. Garber can't make certain owners spend more money. And this is a league that is about partnership. This is a league that the owners work together to set the agenda. And it's unique. It's a different conversation than it is in the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball. Completely different. Governance, all of it's different. But to take the next step, I think you need a new person pushing. And having it be somebody who is coming from the ownership side, I think that's huge. Because he understands when an owner who doesn't want to spend more money, for example, Larry Berg's going to understand that. He's seen the books. He knows. He knows what works, what doesn't work. Yeah, he knows it from the Los Angeles perspective, but he's going to be able to relate to that differently than Don Garber could. He's going to be able to get into the weeds on some of these things that, in a way that somebody who hasn't owned a team would not be able to. Now, he spoke to Front Office Sports today, and he talked about MLS 3.0. I still have questions. I thought we were already past 3.0, but anyway. He talked about how MLS 3.0 right now is already in motion. You've already got the new calendar that starts next summer, the sprint season, the first part of next year. Yeah, it's a real season. It's 14 games. It's short. It's like what we see in Mexico and Argentina and other leagues that use an Apertura Clausura kind of setup. It is a 14-game season. You play everybody in your conference, and then you go into the playoffs, and there's a champion, and that champion goes into CONCACAF. All of the things that happen in a normal season, it's just going to be shorter. So every game's going to mean more. I'm looking forward to the 2027 season, but I'm also looking forward to the new calendar, which will start with the 2027-2028 season. That will begin in either late July, early August of next year, and then MLS Cup in 2028 will be in May, just like MLS Cup in 2027. Will be. So we'll start to get there. Honestly, the calendar this year really felt like what we're going to get into with the World Cup break. You're going to have a season that games are played in roughly the same dates. But instead of starting in February, that's going to start the second half of the season after the winter break. The season's going to start late July, early August. May is going to be when your playoffs happen. And being on this new calendar, you're going to be able to do two big things, in my opinion. You're going to be able to play an uninterrupted playoff, which is going to build momentum, storylines, all of the things that we love to see in a great playoff format. You're going to get that now, because you're not going to have international breaks during that portion of the calendar, which is great. You're also going to be more of a major player on the world transfer market, both buying and selling. That's a great thing, in my opinion. And take the news coming out today of Xavier Gozo from RSL, the young, talented player who, if you're RSL, you would hate to lose right now, going into or already into the second half of your season, a team that could make a run. You don't want to have to sell that player in mid-season. Now, you have time to go out and replace him, but that's never a guarantee. You'd much rather sell that player in your off-season, which next summer, this would happen in your off-season. So I think all of that is going to improve the quality of the play on the field. And that's something that Larry Berg has talked about very clearly. Product quality is top priority. Why? Other than we want to see great soccer, because duh. Why does it affect the bottom line? Why is it such a big deal for the commissioner here? You're talking about an upcoming broadcast rights deal. We saw the potential of the sport this summer. And no, do not expect Major League Soccer to draw World Cup ratings. The Premier League does not draw World Cup ratings. The Liga MX does not draw World Cup ratings. World Cup is a very specific thing. But what it gives you is maybe a size of the audience, a size of the potential. You don't need all of that. You'd like to get some of it, though. How do you get some of that? By having great players in the league. How do you do that? By going out and paying for it. And that's going to be a key. The other thing you do, and this is more of the long-term play, is you develop those great players. And Xavier Gozo is a prime example. Cooper Sanchez here in Atlanta, prime example. Caleb Wiley in the past. You have to do both. That's the thing about where MLS is for me. There's not one magic fix. It doesn't need to be fixed. There's not one magic button to press for everything to grow dramatically. There's a lot of buttons to be pressed. Not because the league's in any kind of negative place. I think it's in a very positive place. But to get to that next level, there's lots of little things that will engage the rocket fuel, as Garber called the World Cup. You're seeing tickets. They're being sold right now after the World Cup in a big way. And yeah, look, Atlanta might be a little bit different because the performance on the field is what the performance on the field is right now. Atlanta's not the only team in the league. Other teams around the league are doing great with their tickets right now. Viewership is very good right now. These are all good things. Robert Lewandowski, Antoine Griezmann, Casemiro, all into the league already with the window open until the beginning of September. This is huge. This is very big. This is not nothing. And one of the other things that we'll get into a lot as more comes out that Larry Berg is going to oversee is the potential of some roster rule changes. We've talked about this a little bit in various places on Soccer Down Here. We've talked about it on AST as well. The talk about simplifying the roster rules, making the salary cap a little more clear, a little larger, having a salary floor, having a salary cap, making it easier for us to look at it from the outside and understand, yeah, this team can go out and spend this much money. Oh, no, they're up against the cap. They're going to have to move some guys. Right now, it's basically impossible to do that. It'll give teams more flexibility in how they want to build. And I think it's very, very important to create flexibility because you're going to have some teams in the league, and Larry Berg would know with LAFC, and Miami would be part of this. I think Atlanta would be part of this. The Galaxy, others. They're going to want to spend money, and they're going to want to go out and bring in big names that are going to move the needle for the league in tickets being sold, in viewership, in, yeah, being attractive to broadcast partners. But you're also going to have owners in this league who are going to want to develop from within. And you're going to have some that want to do both. You need to create the flexibility for these teams to be able to choose how they want to build. That's a lot on the table for a new commissioner to walk into. But you'd much rather walk into it after a World Cup with all of the hype, with all of the buzz, with all of the excitement, with all of that rocket fuel to work with. Larry Berg, new commissioner of Major League Soccer. I think he starts full-time January 1st, but he's going to be heavily involved in things the rest of this year as Don Garber will also continue with the league in helping with that transition, as he should, with what he's done to help build it to this point. All right, coming up on the other side of the break, let's talk about the other big story in soccer in the United States. The U.S. men's national team, continuity with Mauricio Pochettino coming back for a second cycle. What does that mean? We'll talk about it on the other side of the break. More Atlanta soccer tonight to come on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Soccer on the world stage, and Jason Longshore has it all covered.
With Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back. More Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. We talked about the new MLS commissioner in segment one, and one of the spots we kind of left off on affects segment two. It also affects what's going on at this moment. The US U19 squad is playing in the CONCACAF U20 quarterfinal. It's 1-1 in the second half. The winner goes into the U20 World Cup next year. But developing young talent, that is going to be part of what Larry Berg wants to do in MLS, because developing your own stars is very important. A guy like Xavier Gozo at RSL, a guy like Cooper Sanchez, who is playing for the U.S. right now in CONCACAF. You need that. And you're going to have some teams that lean into that more. And Mauricio Pochettino, the now still U.S. men's national team manager, is going to want to see these young players being developed, because he's going to be around for four more years. His original contract, signed in September of 2024, it ended at the end of the World Cup. He had an offer in front of him before the World Cup started. He thought about it. Do you have questions in terms of how much he wants to go back into the club game? We know that he talked to Milan before the World Cup, which a whole bunch of people made a whole bunch of noise about, and it was a whole big waste of time because other managers who were at the World Cup did the exact same thing. He was out of contract at the end of the tournament, and yes, he was going to have to make a decision. He talked to people before preparation got deep. I have no problem with any of that. Ralf Rangnick from Austria was doing the exact same thing. Neither one got the job. Ruben Amorim, the former Manchester United manager, he's the one who got the Milan job. So when you looked at the landscape for Pochettino out there on the club game, it wasn't great in terms of where he could end up that really suited him. So this was the best option. Now, what I hope doesn't happen, although I'll take this as the alternative, or I'll take this over the alternative, I hope that you don't consistently, every time a Chelsea or, and Arsenal doesn't really fire managers a whole lot, but let's say they do, or Manchester United, or now Manchester City, because they hadn't really done that in a long time, but Enzo Maresca, we'll have to see how it goes for him. PSG, if that job came back open for some reason, maybe he'd want to go back there. I don't think Spain is going to be on the horizon because of his connections with Espanyol, so that makes it a little more complicated there. Italy could absolutely be in the mix at Milan and Inter and Napoli, Juventus, Roma, like lots of big teams in Italy that would suit Pochettino. What I hope doesn't happen is every time one of those jobs comes open, then we go back into the, well, they're trying to get Pochettino to leave U.S. soccer. I hope that we don't get that. And that, I would assume, was part of the conversation about taking this. So there are mutual protection provisions, according to ESPN, if either side wants to exit early. I'd much rather have somebody who's in demand than somebody who is not. But that can be stressful at times. So we'll just have to wait and see on that. backing for the extension financially comes from a philanthropic gift led by Kenneth C. Griffin, the Citadel founder behind Griffin Catalyst. Additional support from a couple of other donors. He keeps his full staff as well. Why is he coming back? Did he earn it? I think he did. I think he did by winning his first two games in the World Cup this summer, making game three meaningless, which had never happened for the U.S. men's national team before, and winning the knockout game over Bosnia and Herzegovina in the round of 32. Second knockout win ever, first since 2002. New records at World Cups for the U.S. men's national team. Won three games, scored 11 goals. That had never happened before. Yes, the last game, 4-1 loss to Belgium, not good. Do I put that on Pochettino? No, I don't. Belgium's a better team. Performances weren't good on the field. Could Pochettino have done anything differently? I don't think so. I really don't. There was nothing in that game that I was sitting there saying, oh, why didn't he start this guy? Or why didn't he do this? Or why didn't he do that? Why didn't he make this change? I liked the change he made at halftime to really go for it. I liked the move he made at halftime. And we didn't get to see that really play out for very long because of the mistake from Matt Fries early in the second half, and that made it 3-1. I think Mauricio Pochettino absolutely earned this opportunity. I'm always wary of giving a manager a new contract for a second term period, although I think that's kind of gone away over the years. It used to never work. Lionel Scaloni would argue that it worked pretty good this summer where Argentina got back to the final. That's a pretty good second term. Yogi Love won a World Cup in his second term. That's pretty good. Now, maybe he stayed an extra term too long at the end of that, but that's a whole other conversation. Second terms are not automatically bad. I'm more wary of giving a manager an extension before the tournament, and I think it was smart from Pochettino's side to wait to see what other options were out there for him and also see if he did well enough to want to continue. And he did, and I think it's on so many different levels. He really connected. And that's important because I think when I look back at previous U.S. men's national team managers, I said many times, and I will absolutely stand by it, Greg Berhalter became a punching bag for people, and I think a lot of it was unfair. He was fine. I think he did a fine job. He got the team in 2022 to where they should get. He got them to the round of 16. They lost to a better team. He was fine. He ends up losing his job because Tim Weah makes a really dumb decision in a match in Atlanta in the Copa America, and they don't get out of the group stage in that tournament because of a red card. That's not on him, but he pays for it, and he's doing just fine in Chicago. Bruce Arena, not really a guy who's going to connect. Berhalter didn't really connect with the fan base. Arena did great in his first stint. His second stint in 2006 was not good. Also, that draw was brutal. Then when he came back to try to save it after Jurgen Klinsmann, who got a second stint, who didn't get all the way through his second stint, it didn't work. Bruce Arena is not a warm and cuddly guy. Jurgen Klinsmann, not a warm and cuddly guy, and I did not think that he did a good job with the U.S. men's national team. I think he talked more than he did. Bob Bradley, I think, did fine. Not a warm and cuddly guy. Bob Gansler, going further back. Bora Milutinovic, not warm and cuddly guys. I'll give the warm and cuddly tag to Mauricio Pochettino. I mean, when you got his shirt that he was wearing on match days becoming a top seller, he's doing something. Him singing Country Roads is one of the moments of this tournament for me. And that sounds dumb, but we've never had a manager who you've been like, aw, like he really wants this to work. He really cares. We haven't had that. We also haven't had a manager who put a team on the field that had an identifiable playing style. I thought it was so clear what he wanted to do and how the players executed it. Again, with the exception of the Belgium game. They counter-pressed. like maniacs. They were one of the best teams in terms of pressing the opponent in the tournament. When they got forward in numbers, and they got forward with creativity and flair. You saw back heels. You saw guys going for things. You saw Malik Tillman shine. You saw Weston McKennie shine. Two of the best midfielders in the World Cup, period. You saw Folair and Balogun, the second goal against Paraguay. One of the best goals that the U.S. men's national team has ever scored. You saw flair, you saw structure, you saw grit and hustle. You saw everything you want to see a U.S. men's national team look like. I want to see more of that. And I want to see how that gets better with more time. Now, here's the flip side of this. And this is fair. And I will be the first to put my hand up on how I feel about it. The expectations are higher now. When you come back the second time, you can't just do the same thing again. The expectations are higher. Does that mean a quarterfinal for the next World Cup? Yeah, I think it's fair to have that as an expectation. I don't think you have that as an absolute, and that's going to end the cycle for him anyway, and that might be the last thing that he does with the national team if he gets all the way there. To me, his whole cycle is not judged on getting to the quarterfinal in 2030, but it should be an expectation with what we've seen and what we expect to see over the next 4 years. I think the other expectation, and maybe the more important one, is CONCACAF trophies, because you're going to have opportunities to play for them now. Nations League, Gold Cup, you will potentially have a Copa America to be involved in 2028. That's what everybody's saying. We'll wait and see. I hope so. You'll have World Cup qualifying. That's going to be important. The U.S. is going to have to qualify and do it in style. There will be expectations beyond just getting there. I think in previous cycles, it has mostly been just get there. In previous cycles, it's been, yeah, we want to win CONCACAF, but oh, Mexico's really good. And now you have to include Canada in that. Now, with giving Mauricio Pochettino another cycle, the expectation is we want more. We want to see more. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. And I want him to achieve it because I really like what I saw this summer. I really like what he's had to say. He's going to have a bigger influence in the game as a whole. And I don't think that bigger influence, do not get hung up on Mauricio Pochettino eliminating pay to play. I mean, he's not Superman. Mauricio Pochettino lowering the costs for your rec soccer team. I don't think he's going to be involved in that. He's going to be a little focused on developing the best of the best of the best to go out and win things with the senior men's national team. I hope he has great advice. I hope he looks at things and has an open mind and says, you know what, this isn't what I dealt with growing up in Argentina. You know, this isn't what I saw in Spain when I played there. I hope that he advises. I hope that he offers his perspective because I think it's a really good one. But I hope people are realistic on those expectations. The expectations for me with Mauricio Pochettino, win CONCACAF trophies, compete in the Copa America, don't stress us out in World Cup qualifying, and yeah, get to the quarterfinal at least in World Cup 2030. That all starts the new era for Mauricio Pochettino, brings us to what's on tap, and it's brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26. Four fixtures announced today for the fall. September 26th in Orlando against Peru. September 29th in St. Louis against Chile. October 3rd. Against Mexico in Arizona. That's going to be a Saturday night 10 p.m. kick. Ooh, that's going to be a fun one. And October 6th against Canada in Minnesota. That's going to be a Tuesday night. Two good, really good games in Mexico and Canada, and two games in Peru and Chile that will not be easy to manage. That's how era two for Mauricio Pochettino, we'll get started. That window, I know it sounds weird to have four games in a window. That window is part of the new international calendar that we'll all be getting used to, with instead of September and October separate windows separated by a month, it'll be one long window. There will be a November window that'll be normal, and that will be Nations League quarterfinals. We'll know who the U.S. will play in that after the super window in September and October. Coming up next, the 3-4-3. Three local stories, four headlines, three things that make me smile about this game. All coming up on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
And now we end the night with a bit of structure.
Shot.
Let's get the formation set. It's the 3-4-3 on Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back. It is the 3-4-3, and it's brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. I got three local stories for you tonight. I got four headlines from all over the place, and three things that make me smile about this game that I talk way too much about. Let's start on the local side, and yeah, I told you off the top that we'd talk about it. Atlanta United, 3-2 loss in Philadelphia, or in Chester, to be clear, on Saturday night. Oh, man. I don't know if I can come up with a more gut-wrenching loss that I've ever been around or part of in any way. It was rough. Atlanta played over an hour down a man, and Naomi High sent off in the 27th minute. I did not love that red card. It felt very quick. I did not love Alan Chapman's match management because he seemed to be in a really bad mood from the opening whistle. Arguing with players. He argued with Mihai earlier. I felt like it was a rush. I think it's one of those that, yeah, upon review, you can justify. I don't think it was for the good of the match. I don't. I think you could have not given that red. I think it was completely accidental. And then later in the game where a Philadelphia player, Damiani, just completely goes into an Atlanta player late inside the 18, cleans him out with intent. That was not shown as a red and really didn't seem to be even thought about much as a red. Frustrating. That wasn't the reason why Atlanta United lost. It did affect things because you're playing a man down. Well, Atlanta scored two goals a man down. First one, crazy. Miguel Almiron is either being fouled or losing his balance and falling or trying to draw the foul inside the 18. I couldn't quite tell. I don't know if he would have gotten the penalty if the ball did not bounce off of his knee or shin and end up in the back of the net. You take it how you can get it. That was the go-ahead goal. And Tristan Muyamba, what a goal from distance, curling it into the far side netting. That made it 2-0. And it looked like Atlanta was going to be okay. Philadelphia was struggling to find openings. Now, they did find one. It was a deflected cross that fell to Milan Iloski. Really nice finish from him. Then late, after Atlanta, again, has been playing over 60 minutes with a man down, playing with 10. Kai Wagner, he took over. He got opportunities from wide positions. He put in a cross and picked out Neil Pierre, who's 6'7". The center back had come up to be an extra forward. That tied it in stoppage time. I said that I felt like Philadelphia had the momentum to try to go find a winner. And they did, like a minute and a half later. A great volley from Ezekiel Alado. That's another cross from Wagner. 3-2, Philadelphia, historic comeback. The stats are completely out of whack because of the game state of this one. Philadelphia had 30 shots, 4 for Atlanta. Only one big chance apiece, though. So, again, the 30 shots, take that with a grain of salt. Cooper Sanchez was away. Atlanta played, or started anyway, with 5 in the back, with 3 center backs. That changed with Mihai coming off, and you had to try to make the subs to hold on as you got late, and ultimately the group couldn't. It was rough, and it was rough talking to Tata Martino afterwards and Miguel Almiron. Both looked shell-shocked. Martino said, look, the team responded after the bad loss in New England and fought the way that they did in Philadelphia, and you have to give them credit for that. playing over 60 minutes a man down and getting into the position they got into, you have to give them credit. Now, that credit doesn't override that you couldn't see it out, but you can't ignore it either. The team's not going to quit, and they didn't quit in this game. They absolutely ran out of gas and got beat by Kai Wagner being one of the best servers of a cross from the left side in the league as he's come back to Philadelphia. And Philadelphia feels like a completely different team right now with three straight wins. Atlanta feels like a different team in a bad way after what we saw against Nashville in the first game back from the World Cup break, and it has slid downhill since. And Saturday, you do have to take with a gigantic grain of salt with the red card and the game state, but you don't get anything out of it, and you end up dropping all the points. Philadelphia wins 3-2 with two goals in stoppage time. Number two on the local stories, a little more positive one. University of Georgia, their women's soccer team ranked number 19 in the country in the preseason polls. They are getting ready for something historic. Soccer in Sanford. It's set for August 20th. They are hosting James Madison at Sanford Stadium. Yes. And it will be the first time that a soccer match is played there since the 1996 Olympics, celebrating the 30th anniversary. Tickets are free. You do have to claim them, and you have to get them. And it's important to get them and to go because the University of Georgia is trying to break the NCAA record for the largest crowd at a collegiate soccer match. On the women's side right now, that is just over 14,000 people. On the men's side, it's over 22,000, and UGA is trying to break both in this match. It's huge. It's huge. Kidani McAlpine, since coming to Athens, has really built a strong program. He won the SEC tournament for the first time in program history. This is a good team. Preseason number three in the SEC. Go check them out, and if you're looking for a reason, and you really don't have to look too hard to find a reason to be in Athens on a Thursday night and have a little fun, go to soccer at Sanford. Get your free tickets. Take a group of friends. It will be a historic night for the game in the state. Number three, a historic summer wrapped up with Atlanta's World Cup run topping 1 million visitors. Eight games in the World Cup here in Atlanta, the last one, the semifinal with Argentina and England. Combined between the stadium matches and the Downtown Fan Festival, just those two, not anything else, the city drew over 1 million visitors. The stadium, 544,516 fans across the eight matches. MARTA transported more than 2.5 million riders during the tournament window, a surge of nearly 200%. Arthur Blank called the tournament one of the major milestones in his life. The city is going to host the Super Bowl coming up in 2028, the Final Four in 2031, and maybe the Women's World Cup in 2031 as well. Really looking forward to it. And I know a lot of people here on the station have talked about it. Steak Shapiro has been very vocal about it. Atlanta absolutely delivered all summer long with everything World Cup related. Was it all perfect? No, because it can't be for everybody. Was it as good as the city could possibly make it? I would say yes. I think it went extremely well for everybody concerned. And I think Atlanta has a very different profile now internationally after this summer's events. All right, four headlines from all over the world. Number one, one of the players that we got to know this summer and we saw have his first big moment on that stage here in Atlanta, Vozinha, the goalkeeper for Cabo Verde. He has signed a contract. He was out of contract going into the World Cup. Signed a deal with Colo-Colo in Chile. Crazy that he ends up in Chile from Cabo Verde, but he could debut on Sunday against Union La Calera. Colo-Colo, they're currently the best team in the Chilean Primera División. He said, despite playing in smaller leagues for clubs that weren't exactly giants, deep down I always told myself I was a big club player. If Colo-Colo wins the league, they're going to be a team to watch in the Copa Libertadores, the Champions League equivalent in South America next year. Number two on the headlines, the NWSL, which Atlanta will be joining in 2028. The 2027 season is going to start earlier than ever before, February 11th in Los Angeles, more than a month earlier than any previous season, right before the Super Bowl. The move and why it's so early is because of the Women's World Cup next summer in Brazil. They're going to take a 7-week break for the World Cup. So we've seen in the past where MLS and the NWSL both have taken a shorter break during the World Cup, usually during the group stage, and then playing alongside the later stages of the tournament. The NWSL is going to take 7 weeks off for the Women's World Cup, and I think that's absolutely the right move. They still plan a full 30-game schedule and the full playoff and offseason and all of that. The offseason this year will be the shortest in league history, and it will be important because Atlanta will start building what their team looks like for 2028. You could see signings as early as this NWSL offseason. You could see a coach in place. Lots of different things are coming on the NWSL side, and we'll be talking about them all here on AST and over on Soccer Down Here. Number three, the League's Cup is underway tonight. You've got three games already in the books. Columbus 3-1 win over Atlas. Cincinnati 3-1 win over Pachuca. Juarez went into Minnesota and won 2-1. Charlotte rain delayed, but they're up 2-0 on Pumas at Bank of America Stadium. Tigres and Real Salt Lake out in Utah, 1-1 in the 41st minute. That's the kind of fireworks that I like to see in the League's Cup. You'll get four MLS teams and four Liga MX teams that will move on to the quarterfinals. That will be a little bit later in the year. But it's all MLS versus Liga MX teams through the quarterfinals. I really like the new format of it. I'd love to see Atlanta United back in it and doing well in it. It is a competition that I enjoy, and it's something, it's one of those opportunities that I think Larry Berg has, and I think clubs have, to grow the game and create excitement. And I want to see clubs do a better job consistently across the board, selling how big the League's Cup is. Number four on the headlines, the U.S. men's national team at the U19 age group. They are now up 3-1 in the CONCACAF U20 quarterfinal against Guatemala. The winner books their spot in the World Cup next year at the U20 age group. Guatemala scored first. The U.S. has scored three in the second half, and it has gotten extremely chippy with guys being knocked all over the field, yellow cards flying everywhere. The U.S. is just trying to get out of this in one piece and get there healthy after a little bit of a slow start tonight. But they're up 3-1. Cooper Sanchez got the start for the U.S. All right, three stories that make me smile to wrap up this edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Number one, Tuskegee University. They are fielding men's and women's soccer teams for the first time in school history this fall. It's been really cool to watch this from one state over and get to talk about it over on our Soccer Down Here network. Women's coach Emmanuel Stevens, he compared building a team from scratch, like going through the fridge to figure out what he has to cook with. Matthew Tarpley compared it to the Maze Runner. Both rosters, a lot of players from Georgia, a lot of players from Alabama, a lot of players from the Southeast. The men, they open their first ever season at home against Enterprise State on August 17th. The women open with an exhibition against West Alabama on August 21st. Love to see new teams being launched at the college level, and I love what Tuskegee is doing. We're going to be talking about this on SDH, and we'll keep you posted here on AST as well. A lot of Georgia connections on the rosters and in the coaching staffs for both teams. Number two, the breakout success story of soccer this summer continues. There was a post-tournament survey that found 25% of U.S. adults watched soccer for the first time this summer. More than half of those said they're now more likely to follow an MLS team. I've said it many, many times in interviews. I think we get really hung up on the roughly 25% of people in the country, and depending on the survey, it fluctuates. But the 25% or so of people who are soccer fans, and it's soccer is the third most popular sport in the United States now, according to all of these surveys that get done. Okay? We get really hung up on finding the percentage of the 25% or so that are not MLS fans or not U.S. national team fans and trying to convert them. This right here, 25% of U.S. adults watch soccer for the first time during this World Cup. That's how you grow it. That's the opportunity. And when more than half of them say, hey, I want to follow an MLS team now. And I know a lot of the stories and the clips and the social media things are like, oh, who's my favorite Premier League team going to be now? Go follow your local team too. You can do both. That's what I love about soccer, is you can have favorite teams in 20 different leagues around the world, and you can watch them all. That's what's amazing about it. There's lots of soccer to enjoy, and I love that more people did this summer. And the last one for me, just this time of year, we talked about the University of Georgia, we talked about Tuskegee. The college season starts tomorrow for a lot of programs. Georgia hosting Auburn in a preseason game, an exhibition game. Georgia State is on the road at Western Carolina on the women's side. College soccer is another one of these aspects of soccer in the United States that is really unique to us. Other countries don't really have it. If they do, it's not really taken as seriously as college sports is here in the U.S. Here in Atlanta, we're really lucky. On the women's side, you've got Georgia State downtown. You've got Kennesaw State. You've got Mercer down in Macon. You've got UGA over in Athens. That's at the D1 level. That's not even getting into D2 and D3, where you have one of the top D3 programs on the women's side at Emory. You have Oglethorpe. You have Georgia Gwinnett at the NAIA level. You have Clayton State at the D2 level. You've got so many, 30-plus programs all over the state of Georgia. Wherever you are, there's a college program near you, and there's going to be a lot of local players playing in these programs. Go support it. Go check it out. Go take the family, because these games are almost always free, very competitive, and you get to see a good level of soccer up close. I love the college season for the game, and just seeing how it's improved so much over the last couple of years. Just amazing. And I highly recommend going out and watching some college soccer this fall. All right, that'll do it for this edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Atlanta United off this weekend. We'll be up in Chattanooga for Atlanta United 2 on Saturday night. You can listen to that on the SDH Network. And I'll be back with you next week for more AST as Atlanta United comes back home for the first time in 3 months in a week from Saturday. We'll get you ready for it next week. Have a good one. Adios.